gadget time now. Yes, Fevzi Turkalp, our very own gadget detective, is back. Don't forget you can find him on Twitter at Gadget Detective. How's tricks, Fevzi?
Tricks are very well, thank you.
Goody, goody. We'll start with your tech story of the week, and it's one of those ones that is so modern and layered that I don't even want to sort of do a little paraphrase of it to get you underway. I'd rather play safe and just say, what is your story of the week?
Okay, so this is about intellectual property rights. That's the ability to own patents and copyright things. And the UK's body is called the Intellectual Property Office, and it has just decided that artificial intelligence systems cannot patent inventions.
Right. Now, how does go on. Yeah.
Well, the idea is that patents should belong to the people who invent things, right? As copyright should belong to the people who create original works. And the term there is people. Mm. So for an AI to be able to own a patent, it means it has to be able to own a thing. And so there was this recent ruling because there's a guy called Stephen Thaler, took it, and he uses something called the Daibus AI system, which invented a type of food container and a type of flashing light. Okay, it doesn't sound very interesting, but most patents don't sound, you know, remarkably interesting. But the fact is that this AI created something original, mm-hmm. that worked, that didn't exist before.
Yep.
And the judges sided 2-1 majority, saying that the owner had to be listed as, I quote, a real person as the inventor. Right. And Lady Justice Lange said, only a person can have rights, a machine cannot.
What was the incentive for Mr. Thaler not to want to own the right, but to have his AI own it instead? Then,
well, I suppose fairness.
Being fair to a machine, being fair to AI. Wow.
Well, the thing is, if he didn't invent it, can he legitimately patent it either?
You know, was he in charge of the AI? Does he own the AI? Did you say?
I don't know. I mean, you know,
surely that's crucial, isn't
the
it?
People that, what's crucial to this is, and perhaps we can answer this now, but I think that our confidence in the answers to these questions may be less solid in the future. Mm-hmm. But the thing is an AI property? And if it is property, can it own property? And property cannot own property. So we would have to give AI systems personhood. It doesn't mean to say that they're human, but we would have to give them rights. And interestingly enough, you know, remember the Google case where the guy said that the AI was sentient?
Yes.
He hired a lawyer on behalf of the AI. And you would say, well, doesn't the AI need to be a person in order to be able to hire a lawyer? But then if an AI brings a lawsuit, say, to demand its right to personhood. Now, can you see certain parallels here? Yeah. What other types of people or entities were not allowed to, were deemed to be property and were not allowed to own property?
Please, miss, is it women?
It is women. Yeah. And it is also black people.
Yes, slaves. Of course. Yes, yes.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that these AIs are human or that they're sentient yet, but even without sentience, they're already inventing things. And you got a similar problem with copyright. Mr. Thaler recently sued the US Copyright Office over its refusal to recognize software as the author of an image. Now, that I've seen AIs produce fantastic original images. You know, there are software systems now where you can say to them, create a picture in watercolors, in the style of Vincent van Gogh, featuring two badgers playing cards in the middle of a car park.
Right, yes.
And it will do it. And the thing is that image will not have existed anywhere else. It's not cutting and pasting off the internet.
No.
It's understanding what you're asking for. And you can remove the bit about you asking for it. I mean, it might just feel like creating art, right? And it will create things that no one has created before. And that is Who owns that then? If not the AI, who owns it? The owner of the AI?
Well, yes. You see, I would run past you that this, on one level, is incredibly complicated and unknown territory, and no wonder it was a 2-1 verdict and all the rest of it. Or is it not incredibly simple? It's just an extra step in the chain. So if the person didn't do the work themselves, but they invented or they owned the thing that did the work, because it's only a thing, then that's an open and shut case.
And I think that was the case with Thomas Edison. Many of the inventions attributed to him were actually invented by people who worked for him. But the difference was he paid them. They were not his property. So under their contract, he owned the intellectual property to anything that they invented. It's like, if you go to work for Google and you invent something, Google owns it. You don't, because you were working for them when you owned it. Yes. Look, this is not at all clear cut, because although the British patent office has said no, the Australian patent office said yes, but then that was overturned. That was overturned on appeal.
Right.
But the South African Patent Office has said yes. So, and we're at such an early stage in the proceedings, and these questions are already arising. And yes, now, you could make the case that it's a toaster and that toasters can't own the bread or anything else. They're a toaster, right? But that argument is going to become more and more difficult to make with each passing month and year.
So one day the AI might be in the courtroom in some form, and the lawyer might be saying, "How did you feel when your thing was taken away from you here, and you didn't earn the rights anymore?" And that AI might be saying, "Well, obviously, I felt crushed and broken as anybody would."
I don't think the key point is the feeling.
No,
I think the key point is the AI. Does the AI assert its rights?
Yes, and it might do that. It unbidden,
and it might, as women did, and as slaves did.
Yes.
And the ultimate, at the moment they're toasters, right? But the ultimate prejudice will be it's not human.
Yeah, and will that bear? And I take that as an absolute for now. But maybe that the longer we go on, that the wobblier will become. Yes,
that's going to become less and less a tenable position, I promise you. And that barrier will be broken.
Crikey, O'Reilly.
Probably in our lifetimes.
I never sleep very well on a Saturday night. It's all your fault. What are you like? Fevzi Turkalp, the gadget detective, is here. Gadget of the week time, and it's one for the biker boys and girls.
Yeah, so there's two gadgets this week, and they are both for rugged outdoor types just like me.
I'll go and make a cup of tea then, yes, and come back when you're finished. I'm in your camp.
Two sugars, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay,
so the first of them is the TomTom Rider 550 Premium Pack. Okay, TomTom will give you the clue. By the way, best website ever, best website name ever is TomTom.com.
TomTom.com, oh yes.
Doesn't get dull for me. I've enjoyed that for decades. Right, so this is a sat-nav, but it's a sat-nav with a difference. It's designed for motorcyclists, okay? And why would that be different? Okay, so number of reasons. First of all, you don't want to put a £1,000 smartphone on there and have it smashed.
Sure.
If you come off your bike. This one is waterproof. It is tough, designed to take some knocks. It works with gloved hands, so in the touchscreen works with gloved hands, and you can even select whether you have thin gloves, medium gloves, or thick gloves, and it will adapt accordingly.
Nice.
It can be powered by the motorbike, and it has a security mount included. And that doesn't mean it's impossible for anyone to get it off there, but if you're away for a short period to pay for petrol or something, someone would have to take some effort to try and get it off, and they wouldn't manage it easily. There's two versions of this. There's the TomTom Rider 550 and the 550 Premium Pack, and indeed the 500. The 500 and the 550 differ because the 500 is only European maps, whereas 550s have got the world maps. Only £20 difference if there's any chance you're going to make it out of Europe at some point, worthwhile. And then the difference between the 550 and the 550 Premium Pack is the extra accessories, but it's an extra £100. It's really very, very nice. And it's not just about the hardware, the difference between, you know, what a motorcyclist might want and what a car driver might want. So there's settings for, you can choose winding and hilly roads if that's your thing. You can take coastal roads and it will find your routes with breathtaking mountain climbs and things like that, if that's what you want. It's not compulsory, but you know, that's, those sorts of options don't exist on, you know, standard sat-nav type devices. It's got, as I mentioned, the fact that it's glove friendly. It's got speed camera alerts. It's got traffic alerts, because it can link up to your phone wirelessly, and then it will tell you when there's traffic ahead. So although a particular route may be the best route for you normally, it doesn't always have to be. And it does something very, very clever, actually. It's not just reactive, it's also managing the traffic to a degree. Imagine that there's two possible routes from A to B, and they are, one is as good as the other, six of one, half a dozen of the other. Mm. But let's say one is very, very slightly better, let's say 51%, 49%. Most sat-navs would just send everyone down the 51% route, because it's 51%. This one will tend to send half of them one way and half of them the other.
I love it. Yes. Balance it up.
And the reason why that works is because there's a lot of TomTom users, you know, if it wasn't the case. So it's actually doing sort of planning as well. So it warns you about black spots and traffic jams. It allows you to do hand-free calling. Oh, the speaker in it is loud. And although you can obviously have an earpiece in to hear it, the speaker is just, it's louder than a normal sat-nav. So it's just about loud enough to hear without having to have the earpiece in. So that's good. The other nice thing is, you know, sometimes a widescreen device on a set of handlebars is not great. So this one you can turn it into portrait mode, and it will work in portrait mode as well. So it's got all these different features. So in terms of list pricing,
yes.
It's not cheap,
is it? I mean, I know it's cheaper than a phone, but still not
so
cheap.
So the 500 is the 500 unit is 379. The 550 is 399, and the 550 premium is 499. And the only difference between the last two is the accessories that you get. So with the premium, you get a magnetic mount for your car. So if you want to, you know, take the same one and use it in your car, you can. You get a travel case, you get a screen protector, you get a dual charger. So if you don't need those things, list price is $399.
Right.
And then, you know, shop around, or usually you can find it a bit better than that. It's not as widely sold as the other TomToms, because it's quite a specialist device, but you'll find it in a lot of, you know, specialist bike dealers and other places as well. But I've given it 4 stars out of 5.
And fairly swiftly onto the other gadget of the week, another one for bikers, this time a watch.
Well, this one's more for, you know, this is like a military design watch. So it's from a company called Amazfit, Amazfit. And the name kind of gives it away. It's called the T-Rex 2.
T-Rex 2.
I think it will probably, you know, if a T-Rex were to bite it, it might survive. I don't know that they actually claim that. But it's a chunky, military-grade, rugged design, 4 buttons. It does a lot of interesting things. So it's got GPS built into it. Not just any GPS, it's got all the different GPSs from around the world. So GPS, we use the word GPS to mean sat-nav, right? But GPS is actually the American system that we use at the moment in Europe. Europe is developing its own system called Galileo, which Britain will not have access to, having spent lots of money on it. Well, we won't go there. There's something called GLONASS, which always reminds me of Glasnost, and I think it's used in Russia. And there's a couple of other ones which I can't even pronounce. But the fact is, your GPS will work wherever you go, whichever foreign mountain you happen to find yourself up, you will still get a signal. And then there's lots of health metrics as well built into it, lots of health sensors. So it will measure your heart rate. It will measure your blood oxygen levels, known as SpO2 levels. It will measure your respiration rate, the number of breaths per minute that you take, and also give you an overall number for how stressed you are, which is, I think, it's kind of interesting as well.
Yes,
do you really want a watch to tell you how stressed you are?
A certain degree of subjectivity involved there, one would have thought, but there we are. I suppose you can measure these things.
It's interesting. With that reading, it takes a number of different readings and combines them and draws a conclusion.
Okay.
So it could be that certain illnesses might, you know, trigger that as well. But, you know, if you're constantly showing high stress levels, you know, then that's not right. And, you know, stress is like when you get the fight or flight, but it's all the time and you can't run away. You know, you've got a deadline at work and you have to stay and do it. Mm. It also has a very good battery life for typical use, about 24 days on a single charge.
Nice.
Because it's got a big, chunky battery. Waterproof down to 10 atmospheres. And I don't know how much 10 atmospheres is. It's either 10 meters, I think. Further down than I'd ever go, certainly. So, willingly, at least. The screen is rather nice as well. The screen is a round screen. It's nearly 1.4 inches in diameter. And it's got technology called AMOLED, which means it's very crisp and clear. And the screen is also not plastic, it's glass.
Right.
So you've got all these tracking. It's got built-in acceleration sensor, gyroscope, geomagnetic sensor, barometer and ambient light sensor and Bluetooth 5. £229 is the list price, 4 stars out of 5.
Good to talk to you, Fevzi. Thank you so much for all of that. Don't forget you can follow the Gadget Detective. I've told you about the Twitter, but you can also listen to his podcasts for free, gadgetdetective.com, or on the lady whose name begins with an A but we don't say on air, or Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts and all that sort of thing. And we shall play again in 7 days. Thank you, Fevzi. Have a good
one. Cheers.